You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA.
Hello and welcome to another special post-game edition of the Fabulous Pelton Cast. I'm Kevin Pelton.
And I'm Tristan Carcino. And we have a special guest with us for the post-Seahawks podcast today, and that is Chris Smith, who is watching the game with us here in lovely Boulevard Park.
Yo.
And we all just watched the Seahawks survive. Is that the right word? I think.
I feel like I haven't caught my breath yet. I'm like...
Breathe. Deep breaths. Deep breaths.
So I think we should start at the end. That was the most exciting part and the most terrifying part. The most terrifying moment of the entire season so far. What were going through your thoughts on that last... Let's start with the last play.
I wanted them to run because I do not think that they would have been able to run for a touchdown against the Seahawks defense. So I was dismayed when... I was worried about the Clemens sneak, but other than that, I wanted them to pass.
You wanted them to pass?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, they have to take the chance of putting a running back in the backfield. I don't know why they would not.
It really seemed like when Stacy came out for that last play that it was going to be like, was it Russell coming back at halftime? It was like, Zach Stacy has returned. He's going to come in and score the game-winning touchdown.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess that they wanted to use him as a decoy to get Bobby Wagner out of the back, out of the middle of the field. I don't know. Maybe he wasn't still healthy.
Stacy, and then they just put him in there knowing they were going to pass the ball with a chance. What was going through your mind even more long-term? Like... Not just about that play, but maybe nobody else thought about this.
You thought about losing the number one seed?
Yes.
You thought about being the wild card?
I was like, everything that we were building for all season so far is gone if we lose this game.
It's interesting because then if we play, we have to play St. Louis at home. If they don't lose any more games, then they come in here and maybe beat us. Yeah.
And the threat is that, I mean, San Francisco, looking at their future schedule, they have maybe two losses on there, but could easily run the table for the rest of the season.
But didn't we just see tonight the problem with looking at the schedule and canceling in W's and L's? I mean, obviously this is on the road, so we weren't as confident about it as we would be about the Seahawks playing at home. But nobody was saying, hey, we're probably going to sweat this out down to the final play tonight.
Small chance if they would have lost the game. I was considering how I personally would react to this. It's a weird thing to think through. I was like, okay, we're standing for the last play. I was like, I'm going to fall backwards. I know that that's going to happen. I'm probably going to put my face into the pillow that was next to me for a little while, and a tear might be shed.
Well, the important thing was that plan did not include breaking any of my belongings, so I like that.
I shed too many tears last night. I don't even know if I would have any left.
Any tears left? I was not really going for destruction, more for sadness. I'm not feeling destructive right now. Well, I'm not feeling great. We won the game.
Yeah.
That's all that matters.
Survive in advance.
The game is over. But I was cheering for them to call timeouts on that whole series to try to save time. I mean, in the end, I suppose that looks like the right thing to do. But I would have liked for them to have, if they scored the touchdown, the Seahawks to have time to potentially get into field goal range.
I'm going
to
give you Pete Carroll's argument here because I know what he's going to say post-game. This is what amazing... my Kreskin thing, no.
Clairvoyant,
yeah. His thinking was that if you're stuck at your own 2-yard line and you get the ball back in that scenario, if they don't score, then you risk a safety or a fumble or something like that that could happen if you don't force them to play out the end of the game.
Where you don't have enough room to kneel.
So I bet that's what he's going to say.
And with the way that St. Louis's defensive line was destroying the Seahawks.
Yeah, it's a particular legitimate concern.
I agree that it's a legitimate concern. So what were the games last year? I was saying that we've been in the situation quite a few times before. It felt like last year, every single week this happened.
Miami, Detroit.
Arizona?
Yeah, Arizona, week one.
I mean, Carolina was in the final play, but Carolina and St. Louis both came down in the final drive.
Chicago.
Yeah.
Okay.
Most games before the Seahawks started beating every team by 6 touchdowns at the end of the year
came down to the final play.
Not necessarily the final play, but well, Green Bay.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. There's that one.
That one came down to the final play. So sometimes it was on offense, sometimes on defense. In the Arizona in week one, it was offensively it came down to the final play. Obviously, Green Bay came down to the final play. And Detroit, it was, we won that game.
No.
Oh, they scored a touchdown on the final play.
Yes.
Oh, and Carolina missed the touchdown on the final play.
I don't think it was the final play, but it was the final drive.
Okay, those are the two situations that I was thinking of where it was defensively we had our backs to the wall.
It's weird because even though the Seahawks defense is obviously way better, I feel more comfortable. We mentioned Atlanta. I feel way more comfortable with the offense in the field in that scenario, even being behind, than playing to try to go ahead, than having the defense protect the lead. I don't know about anyone else there. You have to.
Tonight, I wouldn't, even if we had time, I was not very confident in the fact of.
Well, yeah, being able I agree to with score. That.
It was definitely the least confident I've felt in the Seahawks offense since the switch happened last year. I would say probably that Chicago game was when things kind of clicked into place for the offense, and it felt like they were able to move the ball consistently. And this was the situation where I felt least confident in the offense moving the ball since then.
It was basically like we got the first half of the Houston game for a full 60 minutes. Yeah. It's like, what would it be like if we hadn't put it together at halftime? And that's what it was.
So, do you have any more thoughts on the end of the game?
I think that's good.
That's good. Okay, so there are a few things that we were looking for throughout the game and wanted to keep an eye on. And you have a whole list of thoughts over there.
I do.
Yeah. You kept typing stuff, and I thought that you were tweeting, but apparently you were jotting down notes to talk about later.
I was. Okay. I'm prepared.
So the first one that we wanted to talk about was the Seahawks O-line play. And see how that went. How'd that go?
You know, it could have gone somewhat better. There's room for improvement going forward. No, it was a disaster.
This had to be one of the worst O-line games that the Seahawks have played in the last 5 years. I can't think of a situation where I've seen their offensive line play worse than this.
I mean, there's a lot of situations where the offensive line has struggled to pass block and Russell Wilson has been under pressure a lot. But tonight what was unusual is because St. Louis was loading the box that you also saw that same trouble in the run game. And it was Marshawn Lynch's lowest running output in more than 2 years.
So McQuiston and Bowie, what week is Russell Okung eligible to come back in?
I think week 11.
I think it's week 11 also. Yeah. November 17th or something like that. I'm going to mark that on the calendar as a big day.
Yeah, it can't possibly come soon enough. But, I mean, the thing was, it wasn't necessarily about one individual tonight because it was, there was, you know, it's like the dam and you're just plugging holes one after another because even, you know, on the interior, Sweezy got beaten terribly in the first half by Michael Brockers before Quinn and Long got to work on the ends.
It's true. Sweezy is still 1 year removed from being a defensive end. So we can't forget that. But the other thing about the offensive line and kind of like a dam that you're saying is when one part goes down, then everything collapses. It's not like four people were blocking well and one player wasn't. It's that one player blows their block and then the whole thing collapses.
Yeah, and you know, St. Louis was very disciplined in their pass rush. They weren't giving Russell Wilson the rushing lanes we're accustomed to seeing him.
It was definitely the first time we've ever seen Russell Wilson be bottled up in that same way, where he had no ability to scramble out and try to make a play.
Yeah, not even an option.
I can think of one good scramble that he had all game, and it was on a design run.
Yeah, the bootleg.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. It really just blew up everything the Seahawks were trying to do because, you know, I saw a lot of people complaining about they weren't committed enough to the run, but they just could not run the football when they tried to do it. So, I mean, at that point, I don't know what the good option was that Darrell Bell wasn't trying.
Everything was wrong.
Yeah, I mean, you had a little success in some quick hitting plays, the wide receiver screen to Doug Baldwin for a big first down, but it was few and far between.
Yeah, but the fact that you can think of like very specific first downs on the game, they only had seven of them. So the fact that you can remember every first down that basically happened is kind of emblematic of how difficult it was to get anything going.
So thank goodness for Golden Tate.
Yeah. That was another one of the things that I wanted to look at was with Percy Harvin most likely coming back next week, Golden Tate seems to be the player who, at least in his mind, thinks that he's going to be most affected by Percy Harvin's return. And I want to see if Golden Tate was really going to kind of leave it all on the field. And obviously he did.
It's classic Golden Tate. He's so good in the air for such a small player, and that, by all accounts, should have been an interception for Janoris Jenkins, and Golden Tate just goes up and takes it away from him.
Yeah, I mean, he took a ball that Russell Wilson didn't throw particularly well. I mean, that means that on the game, Russell Wilson threw one or two really good passes. I noticed that his quarterback rating was much higher than I would have guessed, though. His quarterback rating was still 117.6, so it's much higher. I mean, he threw 10 for 18 and still got the two touchdowns. He didn't make any major mistakes, but just didn't look crisp at all.
Yeah, I think that's one where QBR is probably going to be more telling, or DVOA is going to be more telling, because number one, it's going to factor in the sacks.
Yeah.
Number two, he's not going to get the same kind of bonus for the touchdowns. So I think that's where a lot of that is coming from. Yeah, it was not anywhere near his sharpest. It was a very poor game by Russell Wilson's standards. And then at times his receivers didn't help him out. You know, sometimes they weren't making plays to get off their assignment and get open in the limited window that there was to throw the ball. And then we saw that big drop on maybe the best ball he threw all day was Jermaine Kearse for what should have been a big first down.
It's true. Kearse had two targets and no receptions, and Sidney Rice with three targets and no receptions. So Sidney Rice went down with an injury. Any thoughts on what things might be like going forward if he misses any significant amount of time?
No one's even doing that well this whole season, you know, besides maybe Golden Tate. I haven't really felt like Sidney Rice has been that big of an impact, but...
And you talked about Percy Harvin's potential return. I mean, that's where that playing time is going to come from.
Couldn't have come at a better time. If that's going to happen, especially seeing the offense just be so bottled up the whole night and gaining 135 yards. So having Percy...
So bad.
Yes. This has to be on... Do you have a chance to look that up? This is the worst yardage total since? It has to be years.
So I was focusing on the Marshawn Lynch lowest total, but yes, let's see.
The game that comes to mind was at Cleveland, that 6-3 game that we played at Cleveland. In the Tarveris Jackson quarterback season.
That does come to mind.
That was one that had to be similar. But bringing somebody like Percy Harvin potentially back into the offense who can kind of mix things up in the pass and the run, maybe give you something in the punt return game also. Golden Tate, I think, had one pretty nice return tonight. But right now it feels like this offense is needing to get something. They need some sort of spark to get things going.
Ooh, you want some bad news?
Oh, wow.
Did you say the Tarveris Jackson? The Charlie Whitehurst game.
Charlie Whitehurst start.
Yes.
No, Tarveris Jackson season.
Do not
Charlie Whitehurst start.
Tarveris Jackson with that one. That was all Charlie Whitehurst. Clipboard Jesus. 137 yards of offense in that one.
Wow. So they outgained the Seahawks today. 135 today. That is really sad.
So I'm going to keep going back as we chat here and see how far I have to go to find a worse offensive performance than that. It could be a while, so don't wait up for me.
That is really not good news. So what we just witnessed, we won this game also. The Seahawks won the game. 80 of those 135 yards came on one play to Golden Tate. So,
I mean, a lot of that is going backwards because of penalties.
It's true.
And that, I think, is something worth discussing. This was, you know, penalties have been discussed a lot this year. This, to me, they were the most impactful.
We almost lost a game because of...
And especially some personal fouls that were ill-advised at best.
Yeah, defensive penalties in particular. I mean, there were a few offensive penalties, but the defensive penalties really affected the game. And when you're playing against somebody like Kellen Clemens, you just don't give them anything extra. You don't give up any free yardage.
Yeah, you shouldn't need to.
There's no reason at all. Did you find something?
So, it's the second worst offensive performance, or the third worst offensive performance in the 2000s by the Seahawks. On November 5th, 2000, they had 128 yards against San Diego in a win also.
Wow.
And in October 18th, 2009 was the most recent game against Arizona, a 27-3 loss. They had 128 total yards.
Okay. So that was rough.
But the penalties
were really impactful. I think there are a couple that were phantom, but most of them seemed like pretty legit penalties. There was a KJ Wright personal foul that seemed like a pretty legit penalty. The one play that in particular that didn't really make much sense was that defensive holding on Brennan Browner.
Yeah, I don't know if it looked like he was within 5 yards anyways.
Yeah, any of the contact is happening within 5 yards. He might have touch the receiver after that, but nowhere near holding.
Well, I don't think he did, because he held him up very close to 5 yards, and then he just...
And on that play, they ended up, or that series, they ended up with a field goal, or was that when they missed the field goal? But either way, that series helped them get into field goal range on that defensive holding call. And then the KJ Wright play at the end of the game is 15 yards when you have them backed up pretty deep.
Yes, only costly in terms of field position. I think that was one of the biggest surprises to me, is I assumed that this would be a low-scoring game like this. You know, I figured the Seahawks would control it a little more, but I figured the Seahawks were going to dominate field position all night long. And instead, they were constantly backed up against their own goal line. And St. Louis generally had the better field position even up until they had started their final drive from the three.
That's true. St. Louis ended up gaining 339 yards in this game, outgaining the Seahawks 339 to 135. This was really sad. But they had the ball for twice as long, 40 minutes to the Seahawks, 20 minutes. And I think that the defense, you were saying that you didn't have that much faith in them at the end of the game in that last drive, but they were so worn down by the time of that final drive.
I feel a lot.
I don't know. I mean, I think that we saw some of the same concerns, some of the same issues that cropped up against Houston. I think those were two very similar games in that regard. So what did that mean? Number one, cutback runs.
Yes.
A lot of situations where when Zach Stacy was able to make that cutback wide open on the backside, big gains in the rushing
especially
game.
Especially those two consecutive runs from their own goal line.
Yep, to get them off their own goal line. Number two, a lot of the Seahawks playing zone defensively and wide open spaces, enormous wide open spaces underneath in those zones.
Not a good zone team. I fully agree with you.
I hate it when that happens.
It doesn't really make much sense why they go to the zone. I don't know if it was an exhaustion issue, if they were afraid of Tavon Austin, potentially his speed. Not sure why they, or if they were so afraid of Kellen Clemens scrambling that they felt like they had to go to the zone to try to bottle up Kellen Clemens.
I think that might have been a lot of it, honestly. But it really exposes the linebackers' difficulties in coverage, and it doesn't take advantage of the cornerback skills. So I think really what saved the Seahawks today, Earl Thomas.
Yes.
Yeah.
Had an amazing game.
He was everywhere.
And sometimes everywhere at every time. I mean, the closing speed on that, what was that,
Kellen Clemens scramble. He managed to run down Kellen Clemens.
Well, Clemens was slippery today. But he came from the middle of the field, 30 yards away. Just like that. I mean, that's why, I guess why they test you in the 40.
There you go.
We have learned why.
There was that. He also made a saving tackle at the end of the game to stop a Darryl Richardson run. But yeah, that was a great game from Earl Thomas. I've heard folks say that they think he's having kind of a defensive player of the year type season.
You've heard that from John Gruden?
I heard that from John Gruden. I also heard it from Brock Huard this morning. Brock Huard said he was telling a friend on the other side of the country that Earl Thomas was having a defensive player of the year type season, and his friend said he didn't know that. I was like, your friend should pay attention to more teams. Everybody knows Earl Thomas is playing well.
I mean, the weird thing is that, you know, we've talked about the Richard Sherman defensive player of the year season. It seems like one player is going to get singled out to kind of get that accolade, and it's surprising to me if it's going to end up being Earl Thomas instead of Sherman.
It's true. Sherman also just dominates the headlines in such a way. He had the interception today, Sherman did, and Earl Thomas didn't get an interception today.
Really did not do anything except catch the football.
It's true.
Set directly towards the
pick. They do look at the stats when you look at that. And also, what about that interception by Bruce Irvin?
We should talk about that.
That was huge.
A big athletic play from a defensive end, converted defensive end out there in coverage 20 yards down the field on a wheel route, and makes a very athletic play on that ball.
Not to mention the return after that.
Yep.
Bruce Irvin intercepting the ball on an athletic play, being off balance, staying up, and then returning the ball for 8 yards. Seemed like it was more.
He moved around a lot to get those 8 yards.
It was like a Marshawn Lynch run where he's back 5 yards and then he only gets 1 yard positive, but it's still like a net six.
Bruce Irvin might have a future as a running back.
We're pretty deep there. But the other guy I wanted to spotlight, and this came up on the broadcast but may get forgotten because it wasn't the final play, Heath Farwell saves the game.
That was really something, and that shows just how exhausted the defense was. When we talk about how much depth the Seahawks have on the defensive line, and also have depth at linebacker, where they pretty much go four deep at linebacker and play 4-3, but Heath Farwell coming in as the fifth linebacker and making a huge play, usually a special teamer in there, talking about how few snaps he plays, but that was pretty incredible.
So who was out for him to be in?
I am not sure who wasn't in the game.
Yeah, I don't think they took a cornerback out, so I don't know.
We saw very little of Malcolm Smith today. Basically,
he played a little bit in place of KJ Wright at that point.
Didn't see his name that much. I thought, basically all the linebackers. KJ Wright was the one who was most in the action. And Bobby Wagner had some tackles.
Bruce Irvin had 9 tackles.
Well, I was considering Bruce Irvin a defensive end. But I suppose he... Or a cornerback.
Yeah, the playmaker.
But yeah, I think Malcolm Smith had a pretty slow night. He had as many tackles as Heath Farwell had.
I mean, I guess as we kind of look at this in the big picture, is this game something that concerns you going forward at all?
Yes. Yes, it does. We need more than 14 points.
And more than 7 first downs.
Yes. I mean, we still held them to only 9 points.
I mean, I think...
Without a touchdown.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think defensively it's that much of a concern. I'll say, I think that the Seahawks are very lucky that they have such an easy schedule going forward. That next week they get to play at home, and they get to play the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who are imploding right now.
Mm-hmm.
And also getting probably Percy Harvin back. I think this is probably the right time for that. The offense right now... We were going into the season expecting it to transform from being kind of a defensive team to being an offensive team with a really good defense. I think that we went in with that perspective, but right now that's not the case. And they need just a little bit of a kick. They need a little something to shake things up and get things going.
I don't think skill position players are going to do it. I think it's almost entirely an issue of the offensive line.
Absolutely.
And we just have to come to terms that this is the new normal. And until Okung and to a lesser extent Giacomini are back in the lineup... And, you know, you're going to have to grind out some games like this. So, like you said, the schedule is big. The nice thing about this is now you've gone on the road 5 times and gone 4-1 in those games, which I think is maybe one shy of the best road record in franchise history. Might even tie it. I don't know. I'd have to look that up. But that's already pretty good to have that in the bank at the midpoint of the season.
It's true. Things are going well right now. I'm not going to drive home and be feeling great about this game, obviously. But when you look forward and you've got Tampa Bay next week, which, I mean, you'd have to assume the Seahawks are obviously going to be favored in that game. You still have to feel pretty confident in that one.
We already heard the line on that one. I think they're like 13.5.
I was thinking it'd be pretty significant.
Yeah.
And that's at home, so.
Yeah.
That may drop a little in the wake of tonight's game. But
I don't know. But Percy Harvin is somebody who obviously needs blocking, but he's less dependent on the offensive line than some of the other players. He'll be somebody who, I mean, we're throwing kind of a little smoke screen to Doug Baldwin. When you have Percy Harvin there, it's different.
True.
So that's nice, bringing him back. And then you host Tampa Bay. I mean, that really feels, I don't want to go through game by game, but just even looking at it up until getting to New Orleans, we've got hosting Tampa Bay, at Atlanta, hosting Minnesota. Those are 3 teams whose seasons have imploded.
Yeah.
All in a row. And then you've got the bye week, and hopefully Russell Okung will be back in week 12 against Minnesota.
Yeah, that's when you need to be at full strength.
Then you have the bye week, and then boom, you have to have Russell Okung back, hopefully Breno Giacomini back, plus Percy Harvin, and you're playing New Orleans at home on Monday night.
Those next 2 weeks will basically decide playoff seeding.
The hosting New Orleans and then going at San Francisco.
And the Atlanta game, I mean, they're not that good, but after tonight,
it's true. I mean, I do think St. Louis is a little bit designed. They're good defensive line, good defensive ends, really take advantage of the Seahawks' weaknesses, but they also had Kellen Clemens at quarterback. And I don't think Matt Ryan is going to be quite
Ryan and Harry Douglas, watch out.
I would not be going into that Atlanta game feeling particularly confident. When we pick chances of victory, it's gonna be much, much lower. I said 80% for this one, I think, and I feel like an idiot.
You did say 100% chance of disappointment if we lost.
There you go.
That
was very close to that.
It turned out to be accurate.
Anything else that you had?
I think that was it.
Awesome. Thank you for listening.
Thanks.
Later.